keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario. My stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so. No overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know. We getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in, full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Anti Media Radio. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. Thank you all for tuning in and welcome back. It's been a couple days since we've been with you on Monday, and we had a pretty interesting show on Monday. We talked a lot about the TPP and those kind of things. We're going to talk about that again tonight, right, Jake?
Yes, sir.
I got Jake Anderson in the studio with me tonight, one of our awesome journalists at theantimedia.org. You can catch his work going up pretty much daily. What was the story you covered today?
Today was an analysis of actually two comedians, popular comedians, George Carlin and Bill Hicks. Bill Hicks, taken from us way too early, but two very satirical comedians, Mark Twain in their own centuries, who deconstructed the American dream. That was more of an analytical article about them, less so than a news story, but yeah.
But yeah, man, comedy is a great avenue as far as getting the message out there. You know, and George Carlin, look at him, dude. He's popular everywhere.
George Carlin, I mean, he's a cult hero, and for the absolute best of reasons. I mean, he, towards the end of his life, actually throughout his life, I mean, he actually hosted the first episode of Saturday Night Live, and people were expecting, like, some family-friendly, like, hey, first episode of the show, let's get you to laugh. Literally just tore apart. It was uncomfortable, actually. If you've never seen it, watch George Carlin's opening monologue of the very first episode of Saturday Night Live. He, like, deconstructs American consumerism to the point where no one was laughing. Everyone was uncomfortable. It was pure genius.
So what do you think his political ideology was?
I don't think he had one. I think he was anarchist.
He seemed like an anarchist.
Yeah, I think he's an anarchist. I think he, especially towards later in life, he had it all figured out. I mean, he knew what was going on in terms of the Roth, you know, the banking system and the different families and elite bloodlines that are, you know, running this country right now. And what's great about him is that he just didn't give a holy hell towards the end. So
he didn't give a shit.
So he was laying it all out. And yeah, I mean, he's they call him Saint George now.
We're also joined on the call tonight by our co-host DB Schwartz. How you doing tonight, man?
Doing good. I'm glad to see Carlin getting some words from us. You know, I don't think we've talked too much about, you know, comedians' social impact with what they say. They can get away with it.
Yeah, George Doug Stanhope is another one. Of course, I think Dave Chappelle should be on the list as well.
Hunter S. Thompson was the original Maverick journal, Gonzo journalist. He could be put in there too because
absolutely, I think
and
so.
His satire is hilarious.
About these new age, these new school comedians that are kind of anti-establishment. Like let's say Joe Rogan.
Joe Rogan would be on there. I would say Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert are, to a certain extent. I mean, they're definitely a little bit more tapped into the corporate dollar, but most people would consider the news they're getting from Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert to be more, just as reputable, if not more so.
Yeah,
than,
I think Colbert definitely, I mean, both of them definitely played a agenda role, but at the same time, they were really, they were still, entertaining, and, they made fun of Republicans really well. And that was good, but they refrained or they held back somewhat from criticizing Obama and the Obama administration. And
I agree with
Hillary
you. I've been disappointed with them. Yeah, they to an extent, they play the same game that an NBC plays.
Yeah, and I remember back during even back in 2012 during the whole Ron Paul campaign and everything, and the Jon Stewart's covering of that. And the treatment of that, that was really groundbreaking coverage, and he actually does do a lot of good things. But at the same time, he's always, the other thing about Jon Stewart is that he's always a day late, and it's like, he'll make a crazy joke about the TPP or whatever, but it'll be like right after it passes, Or, the whole, I remember
right when it's safe to do so. Yeah.
He had coverage on the Monsanto Protection Act, and then it was like, after it passed, then he's going to talk shit about it. It's like the whole point of, I think the whole reason behind a lot of this new school journalism, the stuff that we're working on, is like warning the people about these horrible things. Like, for instance, let's say they try to pass a new version of the Patriot Act, and like nowadays we try to warn people about that before it ever passed. Now, the problem with Jon Stewart is that he talks about this stuff after it's already happened, and it's kind of too late. Even though his coverage of it is genius coverage, it's a day late.
I think that's what he would. I mean, I don't think Jon Stewart would ever profess to be trying to dismantle the system. He's very much a system boy. He's a reformist. Even if he affiliated with a political ideology, it would be, reformism, not anarchy, as opposed to George Carlin and Bill Hicks, who were just straight up Bill Hicks has a bit where he just straight up tells corporate marketers that they should leave the earth.
Our buddy Ali quoted Bill Hicks when he was being interviewed by a local media station because he was running for mayor of Encinitas, which is a coastal town just north here of San Diego. And He went on the local interview, and it was on TV and stuff. And he sat there and quoted Bill Hicks and Malcolm X and stuff, and in his replies to the questions that the guy was giving him and talking about his platform. Man, it was pretty legit. We actually covered it on the Anti-Media, and it actually went viral too. Man, it got up to 80,000-90,000 shares on Facebook, and then he started getting a bunch of national support and stuff. And he actually got, he got 500 votes. We're talking about a pretty small town and stuff, but he didn't win. But the fact of the matter was is that it got his message out there. Young guy, 20, 2 years old, going out there challenging the political system, challenging the media. Dude, he openly talked trash about the media while he was on the local mainstream media. Like, it's pretty good, man. It's pretty cool. But these are the kind of things that I think these little actions that people can do can cause bigger ripples. And they can cause more people to think about more things.
Comedians are in a unique position to do that. DB, who are some of your, who would you add to the list? DB.
DB's on cloud 9 over there, man. You gotta remember.
Well, that's a good place. That's a good place to be.
He's up in the frigid north. I meant to ask you too, man, about the weather up there too. Is it, because I know in the winter it was you're in Minnesota, so the winter is horribly cold, and now what's it like?
Perfect right now. I mean, because we get rain and then we get 3 days of sun after rain, and so it's all green everywhere, and then you get a rain again and it's nice to get that. So
well, it's good there's something going on in Minnesota.
Just come visit, brother.
I actually love cold weather, and I actually love frigid cold weather.
It's only cold here 3-4 months of the year, and I know I say only because now that it's not, it's wow, everything's amazing. In San Diego, you just get lulled into the perfection.
No, I can't. I actually can't. I mean, I don't like sunshine 365 days a year. The same way I don't like nonstop military bullshit that goes on here.
Yeah, that's, you know, those are the drawbacks of living here in San Diego, man. Yeah, we got beautiful weather. We've got awesome people and you know, great beaches and all that kind of stuff.
But we have vets with tats that if you say single thing against a military act, threaten to kick your ass. You know?
We got the highest per capita homeless population because we're such a huge military town and because our weather is so good.
Right.
And you got how many military bases in San Diego? I'd put the number
seven?
Between... No, I'd put it between 10 and 20.
Oh.
There's a lot. We have a lot of military around here.
You know, they just came up with like an official number of 835 bases. It's exactly equal to the amount that Britain had at the height of their empire.
Wow. So I was way off. I probably shouldn't talk the rest of the show.
Well,
actually,
you're talking about 835 around the world.
Yeah, and a lot of them are what they call, I guess, like pill boxes, where they're just like supply depots with like a couple people at most there.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, shit, dude. So we got almost 835, and then the next biggest country is probably, I don't know, Russia? You would think it'd be Russia, but Russia's only got one or two bases outside of its borders.
Probably China has a bunch in Africa we just don't know about.
If China has military bases, they're all secret. They don't have anything on the books outside of their own country.
At least that's what Google Maps would have you believe.
They're like taking Congo over right now and turning a blind eye to us, you know, basically partitioning off the Middle East.
Yeah, man, you know, that's one of the things that it's kind of prophetic, too, going back to these figures from the past. Orwell, too, he kind of predicted this proxy war that would be going on in that region.
Yeah.
You know, and it was always this battle between the transatlantic people, which is like the U.S. and like Britain, and then the Eurasian, and then the... I can't remember all of them, but there's three different factions, you know.
One of them was Oceania.
Oceania.
Could anyone have expected Orwell to have been understated? I mean, he's such a cliche, and yet he was so prescient that somehow it's like the stuff, it's almost like he wrote like a blueprint of what was going to happen, almost to a T.
Yeah. Some people have said that he was too on point and that he had some kind of inside information and that it, you know.
He was pretty on point, and so is Huxley now with the pharmaceutical industry going haywire. And I saw, Nick, that it officially passed. Vaccinations were now mandatory for public school children. And, you know, I don't know what that's going to do now. I mean, if people have the means, they're probably going to send their children to private school even more now.
Yeah, me and Jake were actually talking about it before the show about whether we should talk about the vaccines and stuff. And we're like, nah, we're probably not. But yeah,
I mean,
man,
it's a
big topic, man, and I personally, coming from like a biotech background, I think in theory vaccines are good, but and can be used for good, especially in like high risk areas and stuff. Do they need to be 100% mandated by the government? And you know, knowing what we know about the FDA and the USDA and the corruption between that and the Congress and the everything, you know, the whole government. Do I think that the state should mandate all that stuff? No, dude, I don't think they should. But am I saying vaccines are bad? No.
Yeah, and I also don't think that.
Theory, man, but if they got to be used in the right way.
I also don't think
abused,
that, you know,
I mean, that can be debated.
Scientific consensus, of course, is that I mean, the autism thing, of course, has been debunked. We know that there are very problematic pieces of evidence. Similar to GMOs, but the smoking gun, you know, there's just, I think you have to be very careful with acting upon things without definitive proof. And I understand, of course, that, you know, corporations are funding a lot of the scientific research that debunk these things, but I think people need to be a little more careful with some of the rhetoric that's being put out there.
Just do your own research is all I can say.
Right.
I used to be more in a propaganda camp against it, but I started to see that, you know, these problems didn't really come about until they changed some of the manufacturing guidelines through NAFTA. Like, because me and you and Nick are all born pre-1992, I'm assuming. I don't know. but I'm assuming we are. These things were made to a way higher exacting standard, these vaccines. They didn't have any of the heavy metal particle compounds in such high numbers. Mm-hmm. That was because of NAFTA, that the standards lowered. They can get away with more. Secondly was we didn't ever have a schedule like we have where you get hepatitis B at birth and you get 52 total shots. We had like 8. And they spread them out over like our first 2 years at 3 months each. 3 months after you're born and then each 3 months. So they got rid of the big ones. They got rid of polio. They got rid of all the horrible debilitating ones. And they said, you know what? This is a booming business because we got people now eating out of our palm. And that's what it's at. It's at a dangerous precedent here. Look at European numbers. They're not nearly at the same for all these side effects.
Yeah, dude. And if you look also at like the money that came in, and that's something to keep in mind when this debate, as this debate rages on, because DB, I think you're completely right, man. Like, there's a very good scientific application for vaccines, but when we start seeing this, I mean, what do you want to call it? Conscription vaccine for the children. If you want your kids to go to school,
talk about mass consumerism.
You have to wonder if this isn't some, you know, if this isn't collusion going on between the pharmaceutical companies and the California state legislature. And then you look, there was an article out of the Sacramento Bee, which is the one that covers all the news out of the capital of California. And it talked about the money that came in. The money flowed in big time, dude, in the run-up to this vote on this law. The money flowed in big time from the pharmaceutical companies that were going to profit off of this mandated vaccine. So you always got to keep in mind, yeah, there is a scientific reason for vaccines, but there's also the possibility for government collusion between corporate and government.
The possibility of? I mean,
it's a given, and
that's where the danger is, I think.
Exactly.
That's why we have to take all
the vaccine arguments with a grain of salt, dude.
Right.
Because in the end, in theory, vaccines are good. In practice, I mean, it's at least partially corrupted. You know, so we got to keep all of that stuff in mind.
Anything involving big pharma has to be called into question, you know.
The pharmaceutical industry is the biggest conflict of interest that exists,
right,
really, in the U.S. economy and the world economy, dude. Because on one hand, like, you're tasked with fixing people. On the other hand, if you fix everybody, then you got no customers.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So you got to keep that in mind, man. It's a business. It's a huge business, multi-trillion, like worldwide. It's a $1 trillion industry probably, and you know they have to keep making their money. Do they want to cure things like cancer? Do they fully want to cure those kind of things? I mean, shit, dude. Sometimes you see what they do and you say, no, they probably don't, because the pharmaceutical companies, you know, let's look at Novartis, right? And, you know, Novartis is this European pharmaceutical company, and they make drugs to combat various things, including cancer and things like that. Their parent company manufactures pesticides. The pesticides that their parent company manufactures...
Oh,
has been known to cause breast cancer in the environment. The same company that they have on the other side as a subsidiary, Novartis, makes the drug to treat the breast cancer that is caused by their pesticides.
That's a sickening circle.
And there was a U.S. scientist that discovered it, and when he started researching it, they started stalking him and blackmailing him and all this shit. Dude, this is all documented. He gave a TED Talk, too. This scientist gave a TED Talk. Look it up. Look up atrazine,
breast cancer.
I can't remember his name.
Well, look it up.
But if you Google atrazine breast cancer and scientists, you're going to find this guy's TED Talk, and he gives a huge, huge, just, he lays it all out there about how he was blackmailed and stalked and, dude, all kinds of stuff. And this stuff goes on often. We have a story it's going to be pretty exclusive that's coming out, and I can't elaborate too much on it before we post it because it's going to be really big. But these kind of things happen, man. Blackmail. Bribery,
oh, absolutely.
You know, within the industry, within the government, within
the
military.
Rampant. The journalism is a at least in anything mainstream that you're going to see on the news, it's paid for, it's conscripted. It's, you know, that's why what we're doing here is, you know, say what you will about it, it's not paid for by corporations. And you just have to remember that any damn thing you're going to hear on television or from any kind of, even a, to a certain extent, a scientific journal. I just read a book by a guy, a researcher, who's just talking about how Scientists don't. Their money and their career is directly related to who's funding them. What they research has to fall in line with their sponsor, or they get their money pulled and their career gets disparaged. It's a corporatocracy. And so should you listen to a conspiracy theorist? Not necessarily. Should you listen to a scientist? Yes, with a caveat, which is that you have to understand that there are shades of gray here that we don't fully understand yet. Scientists are reporting phenomena that they see that can be described in patterns and tested and retested, but they're not necessarily describing the truth.
Yeah, man, all the data can be manipulated,
yeah,
et cetera, dude. And so it's hard to believe in any kind of...
Can't believe in anything, man.
You know, any scientific stuff, dude, like you gotta take it all with a grain of salt, do your own research.
I'll draw the line with climate change. Climate change is real. It's not for a global carbon tax. Climate change is real. We've got to dismantle petroleum.
I mean,
end of discussion. I have no tolerance with that shit.
Man, is that, like, you know, obviously we shouldn't be polluting the earth. You know, that's the main thing here, is like, we should not be polluting the hell out of the earth. You can't get any more simple than that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We shouldn't be cutting down massive amounts of forests. We shouldn't be pumping a shitload of, you know, carbon into the atmosphere. You know, those are just things that the earth would be better off without doing. I mean,
yeah,
the earth is always constantly in its state of change no matter what, but these changes normally take a long time. Humans definitely have the ability to accelerate these changes, you know, and so...
With irreversible consequences.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is that the earth will continue on that. People always talk about this shit like, oh, it's the end of the world. No, it might be the end for
humans.
The
earth is going on.
The earth continues on no matter
the
what.
The species on it might not be. The biodiversity,
not the
habitats.
Not the ones that are here, right? And then we saw the same thing happen with the dinosaurs. Like, there was a certain set of biological presence on the earth, and then after a massive... Whatever,
they lived for like 60 million years, though. Like, you know, they had a good run, you know? Like,
yeah, yeah.
When they retired, they were like, all right.
But mammals have now had a decent run at it, too.
But not intelligent human life has not had a chance to flourish at maximum capacity of what we could be doing, which is getting working in harmony with the earth to establish things that could push technology.
That's the thing, though. The whole question is why, though? Why make all this technology? Why leave the earth? Why wander the stars? Like, what's the point of it?
Well, I mean, if you ask me, being an existentialist, I don't necessarily think there is a reason, except I don't think we should go out to the stars until we get our shit together, because we're gonna, you know, what's the point in rehab, you know, terraforming Mars if we're just gonna set up a Starbucks there? You know, there's not a whole lot of point there, but.
If anybody wants to join this conversation, feel free to call in 718-717-8296.
I think we have to get off the earth, because in my heart of hearts, have faith that somehow, whether via a consciousness awakening or advanced transhumanist technologies, I think we are going to advance and evolve. And I, for one, while I do think most humans are crazy and they scare the hell out of me, I don't want us to go extinct. I don't want the species to go extinct. And I think we don't want to have all our eggs in one basket. So let's get an enclave going on the moon. Let's change some things. We got major changes we got to make,
yeah,
first.
I think humanity has to prove itself as worthy to enter the stars, dude.
Enter the stars? I'm talking about the moon, dude.
Well, no, I mean, like, as far as, like, getting off planet and starting permanent colonies outside of our own solar system, man, like, we're not humanity as is, bro. Like, I wouldn't want to see us do that. You know what I mean? I think you pretty much agree with me on
that.
Yeah,
I do.
Humanity is in a state of affairs right now where we're greedy as hell, we're violent as hell. We were coercive. We do horrible things to all kinds of people. Every country is guilty of some kind of crime.
We are pathological sickness. I mean, it's no doubt. Yeah.
So
I think you mean every government on Earth is guilty of those crimes, not the people.
But DB, I want to have more faith in people, but maybe it's just America I'm talking about, man. But when I start reading some of these comments on social media, on YouTube, I used to think the world was like mostly good people and then a few bad apples were messing it up. Man, I'm starting to think it's the reverse. I mean, I honestly think people are losing their minds like everywhere.
Well, in this country, we're just bombarded by every kind of toxin you can imagine, including electromagnetic.
Right.
And not a lot of people are shielding their brain the all-natural way, which comes out of a pipe or a bong. Unfortunately, they haven't done their research.
Right.
So if you want to really know why it's so crazy, there you go. Pharmaceuticals, too.
Excuse me.
Yeah, we have a couple callers on the line. I don't know why I can't see them on my screen, but go ahead. Caller... go ahead. What do you want to talk about?
I'm on. Believe me, it's not only America.
Let's go one at a time. We have two callers on the line, so let's go one at a time.
Okay. Should I go first?
Yeah, go.
Yeah, go first.
Believe me, it's not only America. I'm from Puerto Rico, and believe me, we've had our governor since 2012. He recently announced that Puerto Rico's $72 billion debt is unpayable, and that's something that we already... What?
$72 billion? What? Holy
shit. Oh, man, that's an enormous...
Yeah.
That's a huge amount.
Yeah.
Wait, what was it, Stan?
Yeah.
$72 billion.
He made it worse, oh, you know, and it's something that everybody knew since a long time ago, and now he just announced it, and it's a shame, because technically we're a commonwealth. But when you look at the terms, and when you look at the whole meaning of a commonwealth, it actually contradicts itself, because we do not have the option of bankruptcy. And in part, I'm sorry, I don't want to offend anybody, but
yeah,
the fact is, we're a colony. We're a colony. We're the oldest colony in the world. It's a shame,
Wow, man, I never even realized it that way. I always thought, here in the States, we always think of Puerto Rico just as another kind of like an extension of Florida or something like that. We don't really realize that it's still kind of like a colony situation out there. That's messed up, dude. I did hear about Puerto Rico this week in the news, though, because of as you were mentioning, the massive debt. And they were, talking about how Greece and Puerto Rico, it's like, Puerto Rico is our own Greece right here in our own backyard and stuff.
Greece is going through a hell of a time right now, especially because I tried getting into contact with several members of, because there's an app I have that lets me contact all sorts of people across the world, right? So I thought to myself, okay, let me go up to contact someone in Greece, because I'd like to know what's going on. Basically, they are screwed. Long story short, their government wants to keep themselves inside the EU or whatnot. And for some reason, Angela Merkel, who's also dubbed as Europe's Empress, she wants to keep Greece as well. So I thought to myself, wait a second. Why do you want Greece in now? Why do you want to help Greece now that they're talking about leaving? Now that they want to ditch the EU? Like, why giving this chance now? Like, why here? So I thought to myself, I think it's because they fear that if Greece leaves the EU, then that sets another example for other, like her neighbors or whatever, like France, UK, whoever's in the EU, and they can go, hey, if Greece can leave, then so can we. And I think that's what they fear most of all.
Yeah, I think you're definitely on to something there. There was actually a story we covered on the anti-media yesterday or the day before about how they several hundred thousand people signed a petition for Austria to leave the EU as well.
Austria, Greece, and some other nation. I couldn't remember precisely.
Spain, Portugal, and Italy are all pretty much in a very similar scenario as Greece are in. And so, yeah, it is a pretty tight spot. And we all know about the IMF. The IMF is a very predatory lending institution. It's like it's basically an instrument of NATO or the UN, whichever way you want to look at it. They basically go in, they find these nations that are completely screwed financially, in many ways because of NATO policy and because of U.S. Western policy and things like that. You go into these countries like they're doing right now, what they're trying to do with Ukraine. You know, you destroy the economy, and then you say, and then you come in, you say, oh, we're going to save you guys. You know, and that's exactly what happened in Greece, and that's what's happening in Southern Europe. The economy gets decimated by the U.S. housing bubble in 2008. That's when this whole thing in Greece and Spain, Portugal, Italy, all this shit kicked off because of our own housing bubble here in the U.S.
Kind of post-World War II
and
Japan.
Then all these guys go into default because their financial system collapses. The IMF comes in like, hey, guys, we're going to bail you out. All you got to do is sign over all of your infrastructure to Goldman Sachs, you know, and to all of our banking buddies. And this is exactly what these guys have did. And this is why the people, the youth in Greece and in these countries, Spain, look at the civil unrest, the amount of civil unrest. They're banning it now in Greece, Spain and
Spain.
They're banning unrest.
It's called the Ley Mordaza or gag law.
So yeah,
You can go on.
So yeah, man, these guys are like, you know, the IMF goes in, they rob these people of their of the stuff that they're. Is rightfully theirs, basically. Privatize it, turn it over into the hands of Goldman Sachs and these kind of banking cartels, and then they turn around and then they wonder why the youth in Greece are like so upset and why they all want to leave the EU. Well, dude, because you guys have been screwing over these people. You know, this is the Federal Reserve times 10 because you know it may not be as big as the Fed, but it controls so many different factions of people. You basically, once you're part of the EU, you fall under the realm of the European Central Bank. And with so many different countries out there, so many different diverse perspectives and cultures and things like that, to lay all of them under one giant financial central bank,
it wouldn't work.
You're asking, you know, that's a recipe for disaster. Can't even do it here in the US. There's enough people that are already fed up with this economic system, and it's only one country.
I think it would be like dominoes. Like, to me personally, if Greece, you leave the EU and then other nations can leave the EU as well, I think, I don't know if they'll, say, for instance, be better off, or not better off, but I don't think, how do I explain it? If they're still in the EU, I think they'll still be damned, but if they leave the EU, I think they'll still be damned, if that makes sense. Damned if they do, damned if they don't. But I think the best option for any of those countries just to leave, like, as fast as you can. Just, it's better staying out of the EU than being in it and still being screwed, even more, if that makes sense. Especially with Spain right now, because, like, when you're talking about the crackdowns on protests in Spain, that's been going on for like since 2013, when they tried to introduce what's called the Ley Mordaza, or aka the gag law. It's pretty much a law that can, how do I explain this in short term? It cracks down on unauthorized protests and also targets journalists that report unauthorized images of the police. And I just posted on my page and whatnot about a video of the people who were demonstrating in front of the Spanish Congress in Madrid. They have like blue cloth like tied to their mouth, right? And apparently this law is now in effect today, July 1st. And as I said, it targets journalists and any who are participating in unauthorized protests. So when I looked at it, I have this app that can let me contact a lot of people around the world. So I thought, why not go to someone in Madrid? So I did, had a few people, but Google Translate kind of helped, but not really. Long story short, there's one guy who just said, yeah, we're pretty much screwed. It's like this law has been in effect, or trying to be in effect, since like 2013. They introduced it at that time, but then now that 2015 is rolling in, they're like, okay, let's just get this straight. Let's get it in now. It's for your safety. That's what they're labeling us. It's your safety. Citizen safety law. It's to protect you. It's like,
well, yeah, exactly. Just like they sold us the Patriot Act. You know what I mean? It's the same exact thing. DB, did you have something to add to this?
I think I was going to say, oh yeah, that's right. As you were saying or whatnot, it's like, it's for your safety. It's for your security. But to me, I think to myself, how is like cracking down on freedom of assembly, like for my security, unauthorized protests? And what got me the most was when they were trying to target the journalists most of all, freedom of the press and whatnot. I think that's kind of shady on the Spanish government's part, and that's why I posted on my page. It's like, how do I say it? Yeah, for Americans who say, oh, we want to have more laws like those in the European nations. That's why I posted, like, be very, very cautious when you say that. Above all, be careful what you wish for. Like, take a good look at Spain right now. Like, that is not what we want in the United States. But unfortunately, I fear that our government might have some militants in store for us. Who knows? But yeah. But that's just me, though.
I mean, that's you know, that's kind of a symptom of this economic system, and it's pretty much widespread. I mean, the countries in Northern Europe, the countries that are benefiting from it, like Germany and stuff, I mean, they're pretty content with the euro, you know, the euro system and things like that. But a lot of these other countries in the South are the ones being preyed upon, and they've kind of been sold out to the banking establishment, you know, the global banking establishment, and they've been screwed over big time. And so
yeah.
I read this interesting article on Zero Hedge on Monday, actually. And I talked about it a little bit on the Monday Night Show, but basically it was talking that there was a guy out there in Greece and he was talking to some of the people. And basically what he found out was that the older people are kind of like, oh, let's stay part of the euro because their pensions are all tied up in the euro system and all the investments. Like I said, a lot of this stuff is privatized, including the pensions. The pensions are handed over to the converted into the euro system and privatized by the banking system. And so, you know, these guys, the older people out there that already have pensions and they're expecting this retirement and stuff, they're like, no, let's stay part of the euro because if we break away from it, we're screwed. But the younger people that are being robbed by it, the ones that are putting into it and aren't getting anything out and they're just getting basically taken from, the younger people are the ones saying, you know what, screw the euro, let's break away from the European Union. Let's do our own currency. Let's break off the EU and let's do our own thing, you know. So you have a big cultural divide out there in Greece between young and old, I think.
Generational divide
to the equation. That's something that we could also, because we can take this what's going on in Greece and we can kind of like, you know, really visualize it as it applies to the rest of the world, including the U.S. And as the other caller was mentioning about Puerto Rico, man, part of that Puerto Rico is part of our country, and they're in a massive amount of debt. You know, California is in a pretty famous amount of debt. A lot of these states, I mean, what was it? The first city to go bankrupt was here in California, and then Detroit. Here. You know, Detroit went bankrupt, and like, you know, we're going to start seeing a lot of this stuff. We're in a big problem here, dude. Big debt problem, big economic problem. There's hardly enough jobs.
90
million people right now don't even have jobs, dude. 90 million people don't have jobs, you know. So we're talking about a huge chunk of the population that everyone that does have a job, you know, we're expected to, you know, cover for all these people.
Well, Nick, they better.
Even though everybody has kind of pitched in on the system, but we all know that, like, the money that you put into Social Security, you know, who knows when, years ago, that money is probably gone by now. You know what I mean? Like, the money that we've all paid in federal income taxes and all that crap, that money is already spent, dude. You know, so we can't really, as young people working in the system, we can't expect that when we're 65, or better yet, when we're like 75, because they're going to keep raising the retirement age. We all know that's a fact. So, you know, when we're 75 and we're going to be like, hey, man, like, let me collect on that Social Security. They're going to be like, oh, sorry, dude. We use it to bomb, you know, whatever country we're bombing it at that time. You know what I'm saying?
I'm just going to sell my dentures at that point.
That's what these people in Greece are pretty up in arms about, bro. And, like, everyone, like, it's classified as anti-austerity and that kind of thing. And it's like they kind of just group it all into one big thing. But this is what they're talking about, dude. People keep paying into this shit, and they keep being promised a bunch of stuff. But then they keep getting jacked by their government. They get jacked by the EU. They get jacked by the IMF. And they're so fed up. That's why the Greek people, you know, that's why the government that's in Greece right now is the Syriza government, bro, because they got elected on an anti-austerity platform. They said, we're not going to fucking pay these guys. We're not going to do any more austerity. Like, this is the platform they ran on. The people voted for them. Now they're doing what they said they're going to do. And now the whole weight of the world is closing in on them, man. It must be tough right now to be a Greek citizen.
Very tough. Especially from the ones I've encountered on those apps. Oh, Lord. I don't know what they're going to go through like after this, but I hope everything works out well for them in the end. Because what they're going through now is going to be just probably the beginning of what's going to be in store later on.
And you can't say history doesn't repeat itself, man. I mean, you can't
say that again.
You can't tell me Greek history. You know, Greeks have been through this shit before, dude. You know they have. BC,
history
too.
History has a funny way.
BC shit. They've been 2,000 years ago, they were going through some pretty similar stuff. You know, and it's pretty sad.
History has a funny way of repeating itself.
It's pretty sad.
Excuse
me
for a second.
You know, it's pretty sad to
going
see
back
that the Greeks don't. You know, it's like, you know, they went through this experiment with democracy like what 2,500 years ago almost, and now today you're still seeing that they're still experimenting with democracy. You know what I'm saying? And it's like still failing them. You know what I mean? And it's like, shit, dude. When are we gonna like come up with a better idea? that like better than democracy. You know what I'm saying? Because
yeah.
it seems like it's been failing over and over again, right?
Sure.
For a second, going back to the to Puerto Rico's problem, today, July 1st, they approved. Since 2006, we've been paying taxes of 7%, if I'm not mistaken. And today, they raised it up to 11.5% on all products. You know, even including internet consumption. It's something that, you know, it makes me think. It makes me think because if you're going to raise if this tax that they put in 2006, it's called the IVU. The majority of the reasons, you know, of why the IVU failed was because people didn't charge it. And if people didn't charge it, at the same time, the government didn't charge it either. So, you know, you're not going to get the money if you don't charge it, first of all. You know, and today they freaking raised it to 11.5, and it's a horrible idea because first of all, Puerto Rico is being, you know, left alone. Like many youngsters, you know, the people that are going to study, the people that are going to the universities now, most of them are just leaving the island. You know, we're slowly. This is going to end up being an island. People say it's going to be end up being an island full of old people. Because all the professionals are leaving. And my question to the governor is, I understand that the debt is unpayable, but are you seriously going to expect to be able to, you know, pay it with something that has been failing since 2006? If it's been failing for almost 10 years, you're just going to, you know, raise it? You think that's going to, you know, solve the problem? Or are you just doing it on purpose? So for I don't know what reason, so you want, because you actually want Puerto Rico to, you know, to not be populated at all, and you want all the professionals, all the people that want to go to college, all the people that want to go study, you know, it's sad that they have to leave. You know, I would study in the U.S., but I would come back because I want to help my island. You know, but
it sounds like what Puerto Rico's experiencing is a textbook brain drain, man, right? And so basically what's happening is that they've created a scenario down there that's so messed up for young people coming up that basically most of them, like you said, the ones that want to go out and like learn something or do something are basically leaving, you know, and then that perpetuates the problem because then there's less and less people that are of the working age, you know, in their 20s and their 30s to work and make money and pay the taxes that are needed to support all the old people that are getting old and need retirement. I mean, that's a recipe for disaster, like, if I've ever seen one.
Yeah, that's why sometimes I get to believe in conspiracy theories, because, you know, it's like they have this supposed plan. There's a conspiracy theory over here in Puerto Rico called Plan 2020, and it says that by the year 2020, two elections from now, the population of the island is going to be extremely low or something like that. I get to a point in which I believe it sometimes, because, you know, at the rate things are going, Puerto Rico is a 100 times 35 island. We have 3.4 million inhabitants. Slowly, day by day, people are just leaving. You have no idea, you know. It's really damn shame, especially for me. I'm going to be in 11th grade. I'm 15 years old only. I'm going to 11th grade right now, and my mom she tells me, let's move. You know, she has a partner over there. She's like, I really want to move, and it's better for you. I'm like, I understand that it might be better for me because, you know, the education over there is higher than here. But, you know, I really, really don't want to leave here. I want to stay here, you know. Or at least if I go there, as I said, I would come back. Because my mom, she tells me, this island is going to be worse. You know, professionals are leaving. Nobody's going to be here. There's no way to, you know, pay the debt. And I try to explain to her, well, if we keep thinking that way, you know, we're not going to get anywhere. This actually is going to get worse if we just keep thinking that way.
I got a question for you, man. Being that you're on the island and stuff, we ran an article on the anti-media last week about how there's actually a movement down in Puerto Rico to become independent from the U.S. And that's,
yeah.
It's also going on in Hawaii and obviously in Texas. There's a big secessionist movement and stuff like that. What do you think about the Puerto Rican independence movement and include the debt and all that stuff in on it, man? I think, you know, what do you think about all that?
I'm actually glad you asked. I'm gonna go ahead and say this. I opt for Puerto Rico's independence. Not for anything. I am not against the United States or anything, as you can see. Like, let's just get that clear. But the problem is, since the 1950s, Puerto Rico has tried to, you know, gain powers, more political powers. And the reason why they haven't given us the, you know, those political powers is because we are expecting those powers are the same, that are equal as states. And we're not a state, we're a commonwealth. So, you know, who in their right mind is going to give commonwealth the same power as state? So we're basically, our commonwealth is known as the Commonwealth Association of Puerto Rico, if I'm not mistaken. Estado Libre Asociado de Puerto Rico. And the whole name, Estado Libre Asociado de Puerto Rico, it's a complete contradiction. And it has been failing since it's been approved. Since 1952, and this whole independence movement, I actually wanted to attend the march, but I can go. It's down to two options: we either become a state, or we become independent. And I'm a pro independence guy, but if becoming a state also, you know, if it helps the debt, if it helps, you know, the problem that this huge controversy that is in here, if it helps, go ahead. You know,
here's the problem that Puerto Rico is going to face, dude. And it's the same issue that Cuba has faced for how long? I mean, just this year, it's been that we finally started relaxing tensions with Cuba and stuff. But one thing to keep in mind in the Western Hemisphere is what's called the Monroe Doctrine. And it's this foreign policy tactic that's been used by the U.S. since the days of Monroe, the president. And basically what it does is it says, look, anyone in the Western Hemisphere is either going to be completely under our sphere of influence or they're going to be completely isolated. And so you can clearly see on the Western Hemisphere the countries that are with us and against us. But the problem is that we don't really discern between the countries that are good or bad. You know, even we support dictatorships, military juntas. We've established military juntas in Central America, South America. And Cuba is a textbook example of the Monroe Doctrine, where we couldn't get Cuba to join our, you know, come under our sphere of influence. So then we say, okay, we're just going to boycott them, isolate them, and keep them stuck in the 50s for the next, you know, 60 years. You know, and that's what we did to Cuba, man. And it's sad to see, you know, a lot of the Cuban people had to suffer. But, you know, in a way, also Cuba has its own, you know, breakthroughs and stuff because they are independent and they aren't subject to the empire. They just today I was reading a story about how Cuba has been able to allow a woman with HIV to give birth to an HIV-free child. Have you seen that? So they're making their own advances and stuff, and they're outside of the, you know, pharmaceutical industrial complex, so they do their own thing, and they do come up with these kind of cool things. And it just goes to show there's a bunch of smart people out there in Cuba. But, you know, the Monroe Doctrine goes, the way it goes is, like, anyone that's not with us in the Western Hemisphere, we try to destroy them, try to overturn them, try to make a revolution. You know, the Bay of Pigs comes to mind with Cuba. In Venezuela, we're constantly trying to do the same thing. Venezuela and Cuba are the two, you know, the only two countries in the Western Hemisphere that have resisted the American sphere of influence, resisted the empire. And you see the way they're treated and the things that they're subjected to, the financial instability. And look at, have you seen the videos from Venezuela where the stores are empty and they don't even have enough toilet paper to go around and stuff like that?
I've seen them, and my friends in Venezuela as well.
Yeah, and that's what we do to countries like that. So that's the thing. That's kind of the quagmire that Puerto Rico is stuck in. It's like, do we continue to be part of the empire, keep paying our taxes into that system where they're using that money to go do a bunch of dumb shit overseas that puts our own people in danger, kills a bunch of innocent people over there, and puts us all in the debt? Or do we break away and try to say, hey, no, we're not going to be with the U.S., and then you get subjected to the Monroe Doctrine, you get the Cuba treatment.
It's the same.
You, know, you don't want that either.
Same, you know, same situation we're all in.
So it kind of sucks to say it, dude, and a lot of times, like, I've talked about this before, and it's one of the most hopeful things, and it's one of the most saddening things. Almost everybody in the world, when it comes to oppression, like, it's almost hinging on the American public to regain control of its own destiny. Because right now we're being run by a bunch of corporate, corrupted, oligarchy, government type of shit. And it's causing tension in the Middle East. It's causing tension in Europe. It's causing tension in Russia.
Africa.
We're colonizing Africa and, you know, robbing them. You know, I mean, dude, so it's really sad and to see it, dude, but it's up to Americans to regain their control of their shit. But, like, if you look at the state of mainstream American culture, and it makes you sad, dude. But then you look and you see all your friends that are activists and stuff, and you're like, oh, cool, well, there is hope. You know, and I think the truth is kind of, like, right there in between. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, dude, is, like, no matter what Puerto Rico does, they're going to be subjected to the American empire one way or another, dude. So it's up to us to deconstruct the U.S. empire.
Our main problem over here is that Puerto Ricans ourselves, we do not know what the hell the problem is over here. I mean, our own governor, he admitted in an interview recently that he believes that Puerto Rico is not a colony. If you're, I'm sorry, but the truth is we are a colony, you know.
A territory, likely.
Yeah, but when you look at it, you know, it kind of looks like a colony, but okay, don't worry.
Yeah.
Since 1948 to 2015, Puerto Rico has been, the governors from Puerto Rico have been of two parties, the PNP and the PPD. And it's like over there, it's like in America with the Democrats and the Republicans. And it's a whole messed up show. And every four years, people are going to vote for the PPD or the PNP. Because, you know, there's no, over here in Puerto Rico, we have a big problem, which is that, I'll give you an example. If my dad voted for PPD, I'm going to vote for PPD. If my mom voted for PNP, I'm going to vote for PNP. That's our main problem. We just can't decide. You know, there's a large part of the population that cannot decide either to be independent, a state, independent or a state, you know, and most of them just want to stay a commonwealth and say, oh no, a commonwealth, it's the most convenient. No, it's not. It's not the most convenient option, because right now, look at it. Look what happened today. The taxes were raised to 11.5%, you know, it's something that's never going to, you know, raising it, it's not going to work. And they're estimating that by October, they're going to raise it to 15%, which is even worse.
And this is like a flat tax over top of every purchase, you were saying, right?
What?
You were
saying
a
general
like a
sales tax. That's a sales tax, right? Anything you buy, you get hit with that additionally, right?
Yes. Yes, I buy something and I additionally get that. You know, it's the first one, the evil that I'm 7% one, as I said, it was implanted in 2006. The main problem was that, for example, if I sell you a product, I can tell you there's no system of an AD card. You have to pay me cash. So I tell you, pay me the original price of the product and pay me the EVU apart. You know, give me two sides of cash. Most people, they stayed with the EVU instead of, you know, instead of giving it to the government. And another problem was that the government was never there to, you know, to take it. If you're not, first of all, if you're not there to take it, if you're not there to claim it, there's nowhere going to, you know, I think they're really doing this on purpose. You know, I have a neighbor myself that he's always talking about conspiracy theories. He's always talking about the Illuminati and all that shit. And sometimes I believe it, sometimes I don't, because of these things that are occurring. You know, before I continue, I'm a little unclear on what the situation of Greece but I'd really, really like to know what, you know, what's going on. I've heard some news, but I'm just, you know, I'm a little unsure what's happening. Is there like an article that you recently posted that explains Greece's problem right now?
Yeah, man, I'd recommend going on zerohedge.com and looking up their articles on Greece, man, because they cover the financial sector a lot. We don't, on the anti-media, honestly, man, we don't really have any people that follow the financial sector. I do, but I don't really write about it, so.
Or you could look up The Guardian, because they posted a lot as well about Greece's situation.
Yeah, dude, but, you know, the main gist of what's going on in Greece, dude, is that, you know, they got hammered during the 2008-2009 financial crisis. They got the whole country, basically the whole economy, the financial system of Greece got bailed out by the IMF and by the EU and, you know, Germany and, you know, other countries that are part of it, kind of bailed them out, and they said, look, dude, the if we're going to bail you out, you got to have some kind of you know, assets that we can kind of leverage just in case you decide not to pay us or whatever, you know, and that's what they did. And so they took a lot of the infrastructure, the transit systems, the resources, you know, that kind of thing. And they turned it into assets, and then they sold it off to the banks, and the banks kind of bought those assets, and the banks own all that stuff now. And pensions included and all that stuff. And so what's going on now is that, you know, the Greek people have a choice of whether they're going to just sit here and pay all that money, all that, you know, interest and all that loan, even though the money isn't there because the economy has been mismanaged, the people have been overtaxed, the money has been spent wrongly, and the money isn't there for them to pay back. So it's like either they got to do what they're doing in Puerto Rico and try to jack up taxes on the people, which is just going to keep driving people out of the country, and then they're going to have less and less people that are willing to pay taxes. Or they can default on this loan and kind of see what happens. And that seems to be the situation, is that they're ready, or they're prepared, or they're preparing, or they're getting ready to default and really, you know, see exactly what happened. They haven't technically called it a default yet, because they haven't, you know, there's the IMF is using a bunch of crazy terms, but like, oh, they haven't defaulted yet. They've just not paid their thing on time. So it's like late, but it's not defaulted. But basically they've defaulted on their debt. And so that's the situation, man. And it's up to the people there. I mean, I think all the regular, the working age people, the people that still get out there and work and make productivity and stuff, they don't want to pay all this crap back, because they didn't create all this drama in the first place. It was created by a bunch of bureaucrats and a bunch of bankers, and a bunch of that stuff was like manufactured, you know, it was just created out of a bureaucratic economic situation, very similar to what you see in almost all developed countries. But the people that are working now that didn't create that don't want to pay it back. And so that's basically what's going on in Greece.
All right.
I kind of
get it. Yeah. You said The Guardian has some good articles, so I'll check them out.
The Guardian,
yes, thank you.
Yeah, check it out, dude. Check out their Greece coverage. We cover it a little bit, but like I said, we don't really have any financial writers, so we can't cover it that in depth.
Yeah, the Telegraph, The Guardian. I think Daily Mail covers it sometimes, but I'm not really too sure, because I try following as much as I can. I like trying to see what's up around the world, and mainly it's The Telegraph and The Guardian that I see that keeps covering Greece a lot, which unfortunately I don't see a lot on CNN or MSNBC or whatever the hell those people are. I can't really see that a lot from them. And yeah, it's not the public facing bullshit excuse.
They don't show much of that, and they won't show much of what went on in Greenland and Iceland and all that stuff.
Or especially with that fast track. Or especially with fast track, yeah. Because they're just constantly on the rebel flag or the Supreme Court ruling on gay marriage or the rainbow flag.
Yeah,
and being gay myself, I'm just like, okay, like, what are you trying to distract me from now?
Yeah,
so it turns out that, yeah.
Those things are valid news stories. It's not, shouldn't be dictating a 24-hour news cycle. Thank you for recognizing that. A lot of people fall for it. We're coming to the end of the show here. Thank you, everyone, for calling in. The calls were awesome tonight.
Thank you. No problem.
Yo, here we go, go through the stereo.